We are coming at you from the COVID pandemic. So I'm actually on Zoom right now, meeting with Arnisha Belial in Health Sciences Tacoma Park. Is that right?
That's correct.
And we are going to have our Personal is Pedagogical podcast. So tell me a little bit about your educational and your professional background and your experiences.
Okay, so my educational background, I am a graduate of University of Maryland at Baltimore. I graduated from nursing school in 1992, went on to get a master's degree at University of Phoenix. I did that online, and that was in like 2006. I kind of did stair steps with my education because, you know, way back when I was in the military, I actually started with an associate's degree in Georgia, and then I got a Bachelor of Science degree in healthcare administration, but that wasn't going to serve me well for what I wanted to do. So then I went on to get my bachelor's degree in nursing. And once I got to nursing, I knew that's what I was intended to do. And so, that's a little bit on my educational background. I haven't sought a higher degree beyond my MSN. I feel quite comfortable where I'm at right now.
So you didn't always know that you wanted to be a nurse then?
No, I didn't always know I wanted to be a nurse. Initially, when I was a kid, I told my family I wanted to be a pediatrician. That's what I wanted to do, pediatrician. And then reality kind of set in where it's like, look, we don't have money to send you to college. You're going to have to take another route. My father was military himself. And so he says, look, you can get an education by going in the military. So that's how you get your education. So during that time, I knew I wanted to do healthcare, but I didn't know kind of what facet. So I joined the military right out of high school. And I was trained as a medic and a EKG tech is what I was called, a 91 November. And so I learned how to do EKGs. I worked in an EKG clinic at Fort Belvoir, Virginia. That was my initial entry, you know, into the military. But I always knew that I wanted to do something beyond what I was doing then in healthcare. So I went to school through the Army to become a cardiovascular technician. We called it a 91 November Y6, where you work in the cardiac cath lab and you're trained to also do ultrasounds, echocardiograms. So I went through that training. That's a year-long training at Fort Sam Houston, Texas. So I did that. And once I completed that, I'm like, oh, love this, love this. And long story short is I was working, doing an echocardiogram on a patient. His name was a general doctor. And he asked me at the time, he says, you know, well, what are you planning on doing with your military career? And I thought, you know, I was a sergeant at the time. I'm like, you know, I'm not quite sure. I just finished getting my bachelor's degree in health science, and that's not going to work well for me trying to get commissioned. And that was my goal, is to try to transition from being enlisted to getting a commission. And I knew I still wanted to stay in healthcare, but I didn't know what avenue to take. And he says, well, you know, my good friend, General Adams Ender, maybe I can set up a time you could talk to her. She can give you some insight on, you know, nursing. And I said, oh, really? Nursing? He said, sure. So believe it or not, this general connected me with his general friend who was coming to Walter Reed Army Medical Center for an appointment herself. And she stopped by the clinic to talk with me about a career in nursing. And that's all you wrote, all she wrote. I was hook, line, and sinker at that point, that was the avenue I was going to pursue. And I did. So the military paid for my education at University of Maryland. And I got commissioned, you know, after I graduated and became an Army Nurse Corps officer. And that was the beginning of my nursing career. And that plus my passion for wanting to teach, I taught in the military, the It was called 91 Charlie. It's the equivalent of the licensed practical nurse course. And so I taught that when I was at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in the late 90s, going into 2000 timeframe. And I really, really enjoyed it. So I did that. Then I retired from the military, transitioned to doing teaching in the critical care nursing course at Walter Reed, because the Army trains its own, or at least at that time trained their own critical care nurses. So I transitioned to that position, and I did that part time, you know, because I was had a young family too. And that was the beginning of me teaching at a higher level. And so I just kept setting new goals for myself. I said, you know, this is really good, but I think I want to go to a community college or teach at a university or something. And then, of course, it's like, hey, if you want to teach at the university, you need to have a PhD. And I don't have a PhD. Well, what's next? And I said, okay, well, let me try community college. So I did seek that, went to Prince George's Community College. I did that for a number of years. And then I transitioned here at Montgomery College.
So that leads me into a good question for you. How has your experience, the background that you have, I feel like one of the things you probably would say is the idea of, I don't really like the term reaching back, but that kind of is what it is. You reach back and you help, you're like a bridge to help the next generation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
How does that, how has your background, the things that you've done, you know, with the military and all that, how does that shape your views on classroom teaching and learning?
So with the military, let's see, the transition I had to make, you know, in the military, they have you, you know, see one, do one, teach one, right? And you move forward. And so I brought that with me, see one, do one, teach one. That's one thing
so
I brought.
So for a lay person, what is see one, do one, teach one?
Okay. See one, I'm going to demonstrate to you how we teach. And in the military, they send you to a school that it does that exactly, an instructor training course where you learn to actually teach. So C1, you're going to watch me do this. All right. Then I'm going to have you do it, and I'm going to give you some feedback, you know, some strengths and weaknesses, and give you some words of encouragement moving forward. And then I'm going to have you do this on your own. But I'm still going to stand by your side, and I'm going to mentor, I'm going to coach you along the way. But that's the way that I was taught in the military. The other aspect of it is in the military, especially on the enlisted side of the house, when I was coming up, you know, they tell you to do A, B, and C, and that's exactly what you do. You do A, B, and C. You don't deviate from that. You stay on course, right? Mm-hmm. And there is a hierarchy, you know, from enlisted to, you know, officers and levels of responsibility. So having that background as a foundation for the, you know, 21 years I spent in the military, when I came into the civilian sector of teaching, it was quite different. And when I say quite different, it's just, it's a different level of hierarchy. They still, although they didn't call it see one, do one, teach one, you know, they didn't call it that. That still is how they were, you know, transitioning me from coming from the military and teaching in a nursing course, because these were BSNs that I was teaching at that time. And coming to the community college, they were able to help me in transition to the way things are done there at a community college by having me go through an orientation process, having a preceptor, being paired up with a person that another professor who actually taught the same information I was teaching prior to, or, you know, similar information for med-surg nursing. And so I was paired up, and that helped me to transition with my faculty members and my colleagues. And what it brought to my students is, I think anyway, is a very I don't want to say regimented, because, you know, there is flexibility in what we do. But I think it gave a good foundation for me to help students moving forward. Help students moving forward on, as to how they're going to approach doing a skill. Like, say, for instance, taking a blood pressure. You do certain steps along the way. Certain steps, you have to do steps 1, 2, and 3 before you do steps 9, 10, and 11. And so I think that regimented way kind of helps. It also helped me to be able to be open to other ways of doing things and other approaches in the civilian sector, because that is a big transition from being in the military and having that certain level of structure to a different way of doing things. So I think it prepared me well.
So thinking back, because I think you said you wanted to be a pediatrician, was that right, when you were younger?
Yes, yes.
Was there a teacher that you had when you were in school or at the college or university that had an impact on you and your teaching style, even when you were thinking back when you wanted to be a pediatrician or whatnot?
There's one professor that really stood out to me. There are a couple, but one that I remember, Dr. Sharp, she was at University of Maryland, and she did maternity and child. And of course, that was, I wasn't interested in maternal child, just doing my rotation. But I just really appreciated her, how can I put it? I appreciated how she always stayed calm. She was always calm, even in an emergency, even when things were chaotic around you. She kept a very calm demeanor. She was extremely and is extremely intelligent. And so knowing, like watching her work, watching how she did things and how she navigated, you know, urgent matters on that rotation. And just her, when she delivered theory, how she explained. And she always kept a really calm demeanor. And I really liked that about her. So I took away moving forward that I would try to make sure I used and implemented when I was working with students, that I kept that demeanor in light of emergent situation, to maintain calm, but also your wheels are constantly turning to manage an emergency in a way that can save patients' lives and can be quite effective. Because you don't want it to be, it's chaotic, say in a code situation, but you don't want students to feel like it's total chaos. There is thought process going into every action that's being implemented on behalf of that patient to save a life. So being calm as you think through what has to be done and actually doing it. So, you know, thinking about what action has to take place, your level of intellect, your experience, bringing all that together and then able to put it into practice, using your hand, your psychomotor skills to do what you need to do, again, to save patients' lives. So that was something I took from her. But there are lots of people that I think touched my life throughout my nursing career. There was I would say she was a more elderly nurse at the time when I was a lieutenant. Her name is Kay Gonzalez. And, you know, just watching her be able to work and do the same work I was doing with, you know, at least 40 plus years on me, or maybe 30 plus years on me. And she was doing just what I was doing, right? And so also seeing, you know, her passion for what she was doing, I think that was something that was inspiring too. I'm not sure at what point in my life I kind of transitioned from this pediatrician mode to moving upward and in my space and moving and transitioning to just healthcare, then to nursing. So I think I could, you know, definitely say healthcare was always something I wanted to do. And my grandmother actually helped me along the way by allowing me to pierce her ears. I'm like, what grandparent? Oh, wow. She must have really loved me. She really loved me, because what grandparent in their right mind would allow their, I couldn't have been older than 10 to re-pierce her ears, but she did. And I thought that was so cool. And, you know, she lived a long, beautiful life with beautiful ear piercings done by her granddaughter.
You were her she was your first patient. I think that is amazing. So you had the nurse mentality when you went to re-pierce her ears.
Yes, I think I did. We had to have the little cotton swabs. And back then we didn't have all these cute earrings. So, you know, I broke a piece of straw off the broom and I burned the end and had a little needle and thread. I took care of her ear piercing.
I'm just imagining you doing this at 10. I mean, Yes. You were one of those kids who were meant to, because we all had them. I mean, even I had a little fake doctor's kid with a little plastic stethoscope, right? High hopes, but I know where I belong. I know I have no business practicing medicine, but anyway, we all had those, but you were actually living in your truth even then as a little kid, because I'm picturing myself at 10 and I would not be anywhere near. I don't even think I could pierce somebody's ears now, you know?
Yes. So, and I probably
did that at 10. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know. My grandmother, like I said, she must have really loved me.
Where did you grow up?
I was a military brat. So most of my years, I was in California, Los Angeles, California. Many of my roots are in Georgia, Columbus, Georgia. I was born in Fort Benning, Georgia, where my parents met. And then we went back to Georgia. So I spent most of my years in Georgia, but then once I became a teenager, my father was stationed in Fort Greeley, Alaska. So we moved to Fort Greeley, Alaska. My sister and I, we went to stay with my dad and my stepmother. And that was a whole different experience too. Culturally, it was quite different than what I was coming from, but it was a real positive learning experience. So I spent 3 years there, spent my last year of high school in St. Louis, Missouri, because my dad was relocated. And so I've kind of moved a lot, but I would say I'm grounded as a Southern girl from Columbus, Georgia.
That right there is a rich thing that I want to explore a little bit, because I feel like moving around so much throughout your formative years and being what people call a military brat, I guess.
Yes.
Is essentially what you were. Mm-hmm. Do you think that gives you a special understanding when it comes to dealing with the diverse student body we have at Montgomery College?
So I do think moving around and being a military brat did offer that, especially in those formative high school years, because that's when we really like moved from and had a totally different culture in high school. So I think that did contribute in a large way, as well as when I was a military member myself. I mean, we didn't have, at the time I joined the military, there wasn't a division in what unit you were in. Like in the past, there were units specifically for African Americans versus other cultural backgrounds. So I didn't have that experience at all, but we were all one. You really were. And the teachings in the military, when I became active duty myself, you are a unit of one. And so whatever your cultural background is, your ethnicity, you bring a different light, a different flavor than any other, and you share that. Now, does it take time to get to a point where you feel like you can share who you are, share yourself, because you are the minority still. And so, but there are people who are just as interested in your culture as you are in theirs. And so being open to that, I think, is really key. In working at Montgomery College and seeing the student body that we serve, it really is a blessing to not only the college, but it's a blessing to the nursing profession. Because when you think about who are you serving in your community, who are you serving even outside of your community in times of trouble like now in a pandemic, you have people coming from different cultures, from their small town, let's say a small town in Texas, and you have nurses, healthcare team members, physicians, all who are moving and going somewhere, say like go to New York City. Maybe they've never been to a city, right? But they're going on behalf of, you know, their duty, their, and maybe they feel a sense of obligation and duty to go and assist their colleagues. So there's a sense of duty and obligation within the healthcare system to go and help your brothers and sisters out in another culture, in another setting that you may not be familiar with. And so I think having that military background, working in diverse populations, like even at Prince George's Community College, here at Montgomery College, it serves us well because we see different cultures, we experience different cultures. So I think that's really important. And so when faculty members have had that diversity, I think it makes you a little bit more open to others, other point of view, other cultures. You see it in a different light. And again, you have one common mission. You have one common goal. And I always go to saving lives, you know, helping people transition from illness to wellness, you know, doing it in a holistic manner. So I do believe that my background definitely played an important part in me feeling comfortable being in a setting where it's so diverse. We have students that speak 3 and 4 languages beyond just the English language. And that's a plus. There are a lot of schools, nursing programs that don't have that kind of diversity, you know, but then when you look at our community, what is the community of Montgomery, you know, county? It is very diverse. Right. And I tell you, our students mirror what we see in the community. And so
that's a plus for them in the ER.
Oh, it's a plus for them in the ER, anywhere that they work in the healthcare team, because, you know, when you're looking for someone who speaks another language, you get a patient that was basically delivered to the front door of the ER and they don't speak English. English is their second language. So what language do they speak? You know, is it French? Do they speak, you know, different languages? And do you have interpreters within your system, in your hospital system, who could speak that language and, you know, work with this patient and help you, you know, to manage this patient and effectively communicate with the patient? What does that say on our end as a healthcare system? It says we care about our community because we have somebody in this hospital, not just one, but several, who work in this facility who can meet you where you are. And so then that sends a message to them that, you know, this is my community now. You know, I don't have to feel like an outsider, you know, when it comes to going to a hospital and there's nobody who looks like me, talks like me, you know, has any, you know, cultural views like myself, or even just understand them. Do you know me well enough to care for me? You know, so those little messages, those little things, I think mean a lot to patients. And so we're producing nurses to go out and be a part of those kind of teams. And they're learning to be a part of that team when they're in the nursing program, because when they're broken down into clinical groups, it's randomly done. But those students are being exposed to all these different cultures. You know, you could have like a small clinical group, say of 6 people, and everyone has, it comes from a different culture, right? And so what an opportunity for them to learn from one another. What an opportunity for us as faculty to learn from our students as well. You know, we think when our students come to college, okay, so we're going to teach them something. But what about what we learn? We're learning something too. It's a collaborative relationship. Mm. We're all learning together. There is certain knowledge that I have to impart on them about nursing, but there's something about their cultural aspect, their experiences, what are the things they bring to the table. We have students who come with already bachelor's degrees or master's degrees in another area who are now seeking nursing as a profession. So I learn a lot from them as well.
So this gives me another question that I'd like to ask, because I can tell that you are really engaged in your students and your students' viewpoints. So what then would you think as an instructor, what is the most important thing for you to consider when it comes to engaging students?
The most important thing to consider first is where they're coming from. And when I say where they're coming from, for example, when I do clinical with students, I always ask students to share with the group something that is something that your classmate would do that would kind of get under your skin. And then so I explain it that way, or I'll say, tell me your one pet peeve. I say, you can't tell me more than one. It has to be just one, your top of the list. So I always start it with me sharing my pet peeve. And my pet peeve is integrity. Integrity. When nobody is watching, I'm going to always do the right thing. You can rest assured I am going to always do the right thing. Nursing is the most trusted profession, and I don't want it to ever change. I want it to always be the most trusted profession there is, and that's nursing. So integrity. So I started with that, you know, integrity. And then we have a big, long conversation about me and this integrity thing, you know, being respectful to one another. And it's reciprocal. I respect you, you'll respect me, right? And again, integrity, always doing what's right. So, and that really goes into, you know, code of ethics and things for nursing. You know, that part has to be intact 100%. And when that's altered, there could be a problem. So I leave it open. Each person says their word, and then each person goes around and explains what that means to them. So the reason that I do that is I want to know who my student is. Just a glimmer, you know, I'm going to get to know them over the semester. But if I can know that one thing that I make sure that I avoid because you may take it the wrong way, then it's going to make for a more cohesive group. And so that's what I want to try to start to build from the very beginning when we meet. And I also think it's very engaging because, you know, only you know your pet peeve. Only you can share that pet peeve. And then we have students who, you know, maybe no one's ever asked them what they thought about something. And they're not used to expressing their thoughts, especially within a group. And now I'm within a group that's female, male, it's different cultural backgrounds. And they feel a little bit nervous about that. But slowly and surely, those uncomfortable feelings kind of peel away and they start to, you know, feel comfortable in expressing who they are. Now they're doing that within our group. Now we have to take care of patients. So when it comes time to take care of patients, if you can't be that in our group, how are you going to be that when you're going to take care of a patient? So it's
and when you say that, you mean a comfort level with expressing yourself. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yes. A comfort level with expressing yourself. In a first semester student, expressing yourself might be, oh my gosh, it's so hard to go into that room and say, good morning. My name is Mrs. Bilal. I'm going to be your nurse today. Right. That could be overwhelming for someone in a first semester. Right. Because they never had to do it. Whereas a fourth semester student's going to go in that same room, introduce themselves, let the patient know what they're going to do for the day. In addition, Say the patient is going for a special procedure. The nursing student could be the one who's going to explain that procedure. So you see how effective communication is going to be key, that you can do that and you can feel comfortable with expressing that, right? Because you're going to be teaching the patient and the family. So getting students to be able to be open, be able to effectively communicate, being able to teach, being able to share with them, here's what we're going to do for the day. Here's the plan of care that was discussed. Tell me what your goals are. So being able to ask a patient an open-ended question and be engaged with them so that they know you really care about what's happening with them, and that you're trying to, again, get them from illness to wellness, or at least, you know, some level of a stability in their health status. So I think that's really, really important to engaging students. I want to hear from you first. I want to get to know you because we're going to be together for a semester. So I want to know who you are. I'm revealing who I am. I'm going to tell you some things about myself that I've heard about me. I'm going to tell you some things that that I know about myself, my own strengths and weaknesses, right? Because I do know, like, you know, they say, oh, she's tough. She really makes you do things by, you know, like by the book, you know, and that is me. I am that way. But in the process of doing that, I'm only trying to develop you and to maintain the highest level of integrity, to learn, to grow, and to be able to impart your own knowledge that you're gaining with your patients. So that's my goal. So I think when they know that, hopefully it alleviates some of their like nervousness of like, oh no, I have Professor Bilal, you know, I hope that that helps them.
Well, see, I want Professor Bilal or Nurse Bilal to be in charge of my care because I want somebody who does something by the book. I don't want somebody taking shortcuts. I mean, when you think about nurses, you think about doctors. That's one field where you don't want people taking shortcuts. Right. And I think about what you said earlier about the sense of calm. And I'm thinking about my own experiences in a hospital or, you know, when you're with a loved one, those doctors and those nurses, they're always professional and calm. You know, some of them are more friendly than others, but they're level-headed and calm. So you're giving them those life skills that they're going to need in that profession. So,
yes,
you know, better it be that you are slightly, I don't even want to use the word strict, but you use that word yourself, like a sense of dread or whatever. Uh-huh. Better it be that way and them to be competent in their profession than for you to let certain things slide and let it go. And then they're not competent in their profession.
Right.
You're really molding the next generation of nurses.
Exactly. And this is one of the concerns I have with this pandemic right now and how we are approaching how we teach our nurses during this pandemic. We're doing clinical simulation and using simulation in all of our clinical courses. It's coming across, I think, very well for some students. However, there's other students who say, I need to get back at the bedside. I need to get with the patient because I think it and I view it so differently. So, you know, in trying to maintain safety to the 100% safety first with our students are doing virtual clinical simulation. And again, not all of them like it, but now that they have at least had more than a half a semester doing the clinical simulation, I think some are really appreciating the level of experience that they are able to receive through doing simulation. We have that beautiful simulation lab in Health Science Building. And, you know, the students get an opportunity to practice how they would care for a patient in a simulated environment where, you know, they may make the wrong decision, but a life doesn't depend on it in the same way it would as if they were in clinical. And so they learn from those experiences. And I think now the way we're doing, doing many case studies, unfolding cases, that's what we've been doing this semester. I think, you know, the students are going to come away with a better appreciation for simulation and know that although they may have missed the one-on-one touch with patients, that they still gained and learned some experiences through this virtual clinical simulation that's being done. We are hopeful that we do get students back into clinical soon, because I am afraid that it's one thing to talk to me through Zoom in a situation, but when you're with a family member and your patient, and maybe they have three family members, and you're at the bedside and all three of them have questions for you, you know, some of that is hard to simulate, and you actually would need to be in a clinical environment. But again, we have to safely transition our students to that. And our leadership has been phenomenal in setting up what we have thus far, and also being thoughtful about when we send students back to clinical. And again, safety is the number one priority as well, not just for nursing, health science, Montgomery College, safety is number one.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So tell me a little more about, I have a bunch of questions for you right now.
Okay.
The first one is, what happened in the past when it came to simulation? I saw those dolls in Tacoma Park, which as a person who loves technology, I am in love with those dolls. Somebody showed them to me. Yes. This was during one of our faculty, it's different. But for staff, we have like a staff employee day. Well, mm-hmm. I became buddies with a faculty member in Tacoma Park, and I spent my whole employee staff day showing, she showed me all the dolls, different things that they do, you know, mm-hmm. and I thought, wow, this is an amazing thing for the students to be able yes. to prepare to learn mm-hmm. in this way. So I want to know more about that. And then I want to know more about what you all are doing now in lieu, because obviously you can't use those simulation dolls right now mm-hmm. during COVID. So what is the approach to learning during the pandemic?
So the virtual clinical simulation, we had a team of faculty members work over the summer to come up with a schedule of events and different simulations that can be used. So in the lab that you're talking about, it's filled with patients that are mannequins, and the mannequins have different levels as to what they can do and what you can perform. And it's across all age spans, from pediatric, maternal, and elderly as well. So of course we can't use that right now in the nursing program, but what we are doing, there are different programs through some vendors that we have students purchase within the program, where there are virtual simulation case studies. And so they actually show a video of, you know, a scenario with a patient. And then the students have to watch those scenarios, and then they do a process of, you know, answering some questions where they reflect. Then we have an extensive debriefing on the simulation. The good thing about these simulations that are being used right now in the program, and it's being used from all across the nursing program, from first to fourth semester. The good thing about those simulations is students get to do that simulation as part of their clinical. It's a structured day as part of their clinical experience, but then they can go back and redo the simulation. Say for instance, we talk about thinking in action, thinking on action, right? And beyond action. If a student did not make the right decision on how they were going to manage this patient, they have the opportunity to go back and do that simulation again, and then make that right decision And then it guides them down, you know, the right path of how you would care and manage this patient. So, excuse me. So that's what we are doing right now. So we have that. We also have unfolding case studies that students can do in parts as well. So each semester has certain cases that they do, case studies. They can do unfolding case studies. There are lots of videos that we assign to students to watch. And then we go through the process of doing like a debriefing of that video and what were the objectives. You know, we start off with that every time, you know, the objectives, what's the goal here? We do a pre-brief. Say, for instance, the simulation is going to be about cerebrovascular accidents or a stroke. So we would give them a set of objectives. This is what you should know and what we intend for you to learn by the end of this simulated experience. And so you give them the objectives, they watch, you know, the video and they go through and they actually, it's an interactive process. They have to actually select what they're going to do based on the information they have right now. Then they make that selection, then it'll take them down a certain road. And then of course, at the end, then you get a summary of what you did and how you did it and a score. And then, you know, we do debriefing where they all talk about it and we engage each student. So that's being done across the nursing program. So that's what we're doing in lieu of in-person clinical simulation for our students right now. So the students that aren't able to go to like the long-term care facilities, that's usually first semester. So those students, again, are using simulations and they're able to get some of that same experience, although it's not hands-on, they're not in the room with the patient, they still are gaining knowledge through the clinical simulations. And our sim team put that together over the summer. And each semester had some feedback and input into how they might upgrade or change a scenario based on what they felt was best for their student to meet their end of program student learning outcomes and meet the learning outcomes of the day.
Are there any classroom activities or practices that you strongly believe in and that you apply when you teach?
Yes, I strongly believe in flipping the classroom. But the technical term for flipping the classroom is that you're going to start off doing it. Like you start off by flipping the classroom. What I tend to do is to give them lecture first. And then in a typical classroom, not in structured remote teaching is what, you know, it's harder to do this. But I give them activities to do at the end. So we'll have our lecture and then I like break up the classroom into small groups. And I'll have at each of my lectures, I try to have something engaging for them to do. So like one of the things when I teach cerebrovascular accidents or strokes, I will have the students divide up into groups and they don't know who they're going to be with. I just randomly, hey, okay, you five are together. And then I give them these cards. These are some cards like I make up for them. You could see this thing. But like one of them is to create a 1-minute video on the pathophysiology of ischemic stroke. So that group goes off to themselves and that group has to create a 1-minute video on ischemic strokes. Then I have them send it to me by email. And then I download it. And I let at the end, after everybody's done their different assignments, each group has to come up and they present their assignment. So the group that does the video, they get to show their video and they are so creative. They could do it in the form, like they can do a rap song, they can do a poem, they could do miming, you know, anything that they want to do to answer this question, they can do in a 1-minute video. So I have the students do that. And then at the end, you know, of class, I will pull them all together and I'll post them on our Blackboard site so that they could, you know, see what the other group did and they could, you know, go back and review it. One of them, for the same content, I call them the MC Ah team, right? And the Ah is for, you know, when you are testing cranial nerves for a patient's ability to swallow, and if they have a gag reflex and can they move their tongue properly. So I give them names, or they can name themselves, and I have them do these activities, and then they come back and they share that activity with the entire class. So these are the kind of things I do. You know, I had a group called the MC Original Neuro Nerds, and they had to go over all the cranial nerves and tell how, you know, what's that cranial nerve and how do you assess for it. I had a MC Neuro Fast Team, and the Fast Team, there's a mnemonic that you use for if a patient is having a stroke, you want to think fast. And so, you know, do they have any facial drooping, arm drifting, you know, how is their speech? If any of those things are altered in any way, then you want to work, you know, time is of the essence, call 911. So I have them demonstrate these things, and they come up with the most creative things, something I wouldn't have never thought about, but they do it. Their classmates see them present their information, and everybody goes home with a different perspective on CVA. So that's how I like to engage students, flipping the classroom in that way, getting them up and moving and working with each other. Because again, the more they work with each other, the better they are when it comes to how am I going to teach my patient this? How am I going to work with my patient? You know, I think one group demonstrated somebody having a stroke, right? So they're like, talk like this, and they, you know, they did all the things, they showed that. So they slurred their speech and all that, you know, so they're quite creative. I had a team come up, it so happened, we say one of the symptoms of like a person having a cerebrovascular accident, if they've had like a, we call it AVM malformation in an adolescent patient, what might they complain of? And we said a thunderclap type headache, this sudden severe headache. And so one of the teams, I guess that day it was a rainy day, and they had an umbrella, and they did this whole skit about weather, but what they were using it, you know, throughout it, they were talking about the symptoms of the person who had this thunderclap type headache as a clinical manifestation of, you know, having symptoms of a stroke. And I'm like, a hemorrhagic stroke. And I thought, oh my gosh, like who would have ever thought? And they were so creative. Everybody loved it. So
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love hearing you tell these stories. And when we finish this call, I want to see some of these projects. That's amazing.
Yes.
Amazing. I have a couple with the, of with them. The students' permission, of course, but that's amazing.
Yeah. See, that group has already graduated, but see, like I couldn't do it during structured remote teaching. I couldn't do that same thing. We're on Zoom, and we can put them in breakout rooms, and we could have them, you know, discuss. But, you know, a lot of times you have one person doing everything, whereas when I'm in the classroom with them, I see who's doing what. I go around to all of the groups as they are preparing their presentation. And believe me, they don't have much time. They only get to meet for at max maybe 15 minutes with their group, come up with their project. We come back together, let's demonstrate it. And, you know, that's how we end the class, with them sharing their knowledge. Mm-hmm.
That is really, really neat. Mm-hmm. I think they probably get so much out of that, and it resonates and it reaches their heart, which to me, that's one of the most important parts of teaching, resonating and reaching the heart. Because if it doesn't resonate, doesn't reach the heart, 6 months from now, you've forgotten all of it.
Right.
Think about all the things that we learned growing up in high school, college, masters. And do we remember that stuff? No.
Right.
Not
right.
Unless it resonated and reached our heart, or we had to use it every day, either or. Mm-hmm. But this, you brought up something that really I want to talk about, because we are in a novel time, you and I right now talking across during this pandemic. How has the pandemic changed your teaching, and how have you I guess, adapted what it is that you're trying to do for this format that we're in right now.
Okay, so I'm going to use this same, you know, cerebral vascular accident, this same class, and share what we've done differently with it. So when it comes to theory, basically the we go through, you know, what are our learning outcomes. We do a PowerPoint presentation for the students. We send it. They can review that information, but then I present it in theory. I have to say it's not as engaging as I'd like it to be. What I incorporated was using questions throughout the presentation to get them to, you know, discuss questions as I'm doing the presentation. So I try to pull them in that way. And so I ask questions throughout that are open-ended that require them to really, you know, put some thought into it to get them engaged. That's the most I've been able to do with how I present theory. But what did we also do this semester that was a little bit different that I think is working out well for faculty and for students is there's a seven-week course. So 7 weeks. So the course is condensed. We have married up our theory topic with our clinical simulation. So the student will get the information, you know, for theory, then that same week or within a week, they're going to hear and be engaged in a virtual clinical experience that talks about that topic. So for CVA, that's the abbreviation for it. So for that, we had the students review a stroke response, like a patient coming in for a stroke through the emergency room and going all the way through, you know, how you manage this patient. So they do that in simulation and, you know, they get to watch it, you know, during the clinical time, and then they have to do their reflection. Of course, we do a pre-brief, a, you know, post-briefing after they, you know, finish the simulation. And a lot of the learning actually takes place in the debriefing session for students. You know, what did you do? Why did you choose that specific intervention when you were caring for your patient? This particular medication was ordered. What was the dose? Was that an appropriate dose? You know, so we ask all of these types of questions during the post-briefing to kind of bring it home to the students. So then you kind of marry up what they got in theory and what they got in clinical to bring home that topic. I know some of my colleagues are using like games, Kahoot. Some of them are still able to flip the classroom by having students engage with each other in the small breakout rooms. So they try to do that. But it takes a little extra, I think, to do the hands-on engaging piece when they are remotely studying. So we do the best we can to try to engage them. But I know we could do more if I was face-to-face. So I know for myself that I could do, I feel like my delivery is much better when I'm face to face with the students. I can get a feel for, you know, how a student is taking in this information. You know how sometimes you have those puzzled looks in class,
yep.
Or, you know, it's like, or maybe somebody's just not engaged and, you know, you kind of had to pull them in a little bit. Zoom, you know, yes, it's the best we have right now and we're making it work, you know, but ideally, back on campus in the classroom, I think we can do, you know, more and we can gain more. I feel like I am a person, the way that I teach and my experience, it's definitely with the students, all of us together, you know, either in a skills lab, in a simulation lab, in a classroom setting. That's where I feel like I do best. But we're doing what we can now. And again, we're putting safety first.
So let me ask you this, because you have a field that in some ways, it kind of reminds me of my field in the sense that it's ever changing. Stuff mm-hmm. is changing. And if you don't keep, you know, learning what's out there, you're going to get left behind. And then, mm-hmm. then I see your resume is huge with professional development experiences. So I just, mm-hmm. I guess I want to ask you, how do you keep current in your practice? And how do you find the time to do all of those extra learning activities in which you're engaged?
So the beauty of being at Montgomery College and us having EAP funds available for us to engage in professional development and having some assistance, that definitely helps. But in nursing, like you said, it's ever evolving, you know, so we have to stay engaged with what's new, especially things as they relate to your practice, because in the nursing program, all of, say, my colleagues, you know, they have specialties. We have DNPs, PhDs with a focus in certain areas, for example, maternal child, a focus in gerontology. You know, they have a vast experience. And based on our experiences, there are a certain number of continuing contact hours or credit hours that we have to have to maintain some of these special certifications that we have. And so that's why, you know, a lot of us do that, because we want to maintain our certifications that we have in nursing outside of teaching. So many of us, you know, everybody goes to professional development. Even for being a nurse for the state of Maryland for your licensure, you have to have so many continuing education hours annually. And so, you know, that's just the nature of what we do. It's ongoing.
So I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm going to ask you two more questions, if you would be so okay. kind. If you could go back in time, is there anything that you would have done differently in your classroom teaching, knowing what you know now?
Okay. Anything different in my classroom teaching, knowing what I know now? Knowing what I know now, I would do more as far as engaging the students from the beginning. I think I could do a better job at that. So if I could go back and change anything, I would flip the classroom early. I would have flipped the classroom before we even knew what a flipped classroom was. Yes, because I really believe, like, when we say that, okay, prior to class, we want you to do A, B, C, and D, and students don't often do that. And so we find ourselves doing a review of everything for about 30 to 45 minutes for the students who didn't do it. And then the students who did do all of the work are just kind of like sitting there bored because they came prepared. So I think we really have to look to the students who are following those guidelines that we've set out and said, hey, come to class prepared to discuss A, B, C, and D. And I think we just have to jump in and actually do that. So flipping the classroom from the beginning, I think would really foster more thoughtful conversations. And I think students would have a lot more clarity. First, they come prepared. Two, the instruction is delivered in a way where they're doing an activity. And then we still talk about the pathophysiology, etiology, you know, pharmacologic management, medical and nursing management of our patients. We still get to all of that. But we do it in the sense of we're jumping in by flipping the classroom. So that's something I would definitely do different.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would like for me to know about your philosophy of teaching or learning or anything like that?
So my biggest, I guess I would say in my philosophy, I think I'm too young to have one almost, but in my philosophy, it goes back to those core standards of care, ethics, in nursing and and living that, not just speaking it, but living it. Because if you live it, you truly believe it. You don't, you walk it, you talk it. You don't just speak it, you have to be it. So that would be what I would say is my philosophy, is that you really do speak it, you demonstrate it in every aspect of your life, those core competencies that we talk about, those standard of conduct that we talk about, we have to live it. And if we live it, then the students see that and they emulate that, I believe. So if we're doing those things, then they will too. So I try to be that. I try to represent that in all that I do, so that students will see a positive aspect of that and seeing it lived. Because of course, you know, they're gonna get out there and they're gonna see that there are people who take shortcuts. And the shortcut might work in the short term, but long term, you don't know if that shortcut caused some sort of adverse event for your patient, because now that patient is off your unit and somewhere else and you don't have to worry about them. But if you didn't take that shortcut, and if you did your utmost following those guidelines, here's that other thing that comes back to me with these guidelines and rules, you know, following that, you know, you can rest assured and sleep peacefully at night, knowing that you did the right thing. Right. Yeah. And it kind of goes back to that integrity thing of mine. You know, I'm just really big on that. You have to at all times do the right thing.
I just love doing these interviews, because when I talk to the faculty, I just really come away with the sense that our students are so fortunate to have you all as faculty members, because I mean, thinking back to you and the integrity and the class and the humor and the warmth that you've had while I've been speaking to you, just to share a little piece of that with your students and for them to get that from you, and to think that one day, 30 years from now, they might be sitting having somebody interview them and think back to you as being influential in their life. We're just really fortunate to have such talented faculty who go in there and care so much about our students and care about integrity. So thank you for the time that you spent with me.
Well, I appreciate you having me and even asking my view on any of this. I truly appreciate that. And it gives me a feeling of somebody cares about what we're doing in the nursing program. Somebody cares about how faculty are and where they're at and how are they serving our students. So thank you for having me. Thanks for the invite. And I am prayerful that we can speak to each other face to face, you know, soon.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.